Blog Talk Radio.
This is John Gresham, your host for Military Monday here on the Right Stream Network, and you are listening to Military Monday, our weekly show about all things military. It is a beautiful day here in Fairfax, Virginia. It is sunny. It is going to be 50 degrees, which means we're going to get dumped with between 3 and 5 inches of snow tomorrow. Such is the wonderful winters here in the Mid-Atlantic region. But we are going to stay warm and productive. And this week we're going to talk a little bit about changes coming up in the U.S. military. Now, lots of people talk about change. But in this particular case, 2014 is a year of truly massive change for the U.S. military. Most importantly, it's going to be a year of massive change for the people in the military, the men and women who wear the uniforms, the civil servants who support them, and their families, their dependents, their loved ones, because we are going to see the beginnings of a massive cultural change in the U.S. military. And to help us today with the discussion of this, we've invited an old friend back that you folks seem to have liked a great deal. She is a licensed chiropractor who has specialized in pain management and alternative healing. She regularly goes and helps take care of military members and their families at her practice. Her name is Dr. Tanya Howard. We just call her Dr. Tanya. Are you there, dear lady?
I am here, John, and thank you so much for having me back. I so enjoy chatting with your listeners.
Well, we're going to give them all a good chance here because we're going to be talking about people things, not the, you know, last week we spent a whole hour and a half talking about variations on the F-18 Hornet and Super Hornet. We're not going to talk about hardware this week. We're going to talk about people. We're going to talk about feelings. Ooh, I'm feeling the shivers go down my male spine just thinking about it. But for starters, let's lay it out for people because 2014 really is going to be a year with a lot of changes for American military personnel. For starters, we're going to end our military commitment to Afghanistan. One way or the other, 60,000-plus military personnel are coming home and staying home. They're not going to redeploy. We're also bringing tens of thousands of personnel out of overseas garrison bases in places like Germany, Belgium, Holland, Italy, and such. And finally, we're also going to be drawing down the size of our military by more than 100,000 personnel just in the Army and Marine Corps. So when you start thinking about dislocating 250,000 people, and that 250,000 people have their people, this obviously raises the potential for a certain amount of cultural and personality havoc, does it not?
A huge amount of havoc, John. And let me just pause for 1 second and let your listeners know, for those of them who don't know me, that although I am not a member of a military family currently, my dad did serve in World War II, and I'm a very proud daughter of a World War II Bronze Star vet. But I did practice in Charleston, South Carolina, and currently in Annapolis, Maryland, two very large military towns. So I have a huge patient base that has dealt with these stresses in the past and are currently dealing with them. So I have a really intimate knowledge of what's coming for the military populations that are coming home.
Exactly. And that's the reason we want you here, because in addition to your bending and stretching that you do professionally, you also write and edit a lifestyle blog and are doing more and more in the alternative care and healing parts of the business as well, correct?
Yes, definitely in the people business in every aspect, both in direct care. And we say that we help our patients with a checkup from the neck up, because part of healthcare, part of being healthy is having emotional and mental good health. So we definitely have to address those factors in our patients' physical well-being, or else they won't be well. So we're not psychologists, but we certainly have to address those aspects in treating the whole patient. And with my lifestyle blogging, I have wonderful conversations with thousands of readers around the world about the very issues that we're talking about today. So it's very near and dear to my heart.
I might add, there's also going to be another dislocating force going on, and that is a major change in U.S. strategy. I know we don't normally talk to lifestyle bloggers and consultants about major U.S. strategy changes, but we're going to be moving a huge percentage of our force from the East Coast, where we've really been watching things in Europe and the NATO regions for the past 70 years, and well over 60% of our military is going to be realigned to go out to the Pacific, which means a lot of people are going to be picking up and having to move. Ships and aircraft and units are going to be moving to West Coast and Pacific bases in new and unusual places like Hawaii, Alaska, Japan, the Philippines, Australia, even Singapore. So there's going to be a whole bunch of lifestyle stress. And let's talk about, there's been an existing normal, okay? For 70 years, we've had a basic construct to the way the military's been based, the way it's been used, and the way it's been, if you will, aligned. For people in the military, there's been a consistency. When you talk about a base of personnel like that, a quarter of a million service personnel, plus their families, their friends, their loved ones, and you uproot them, what kinds of stresses are we talking about that we're getting into here and getting into with very little warning and very little advance time?
They're just amazing stresses, John. I had a chat with a patient and military spouse today, actually, and she relayed a story, and this is just one tiny example that ripples through the entire military that can really be the demise of a personal relationship and a way of life. This was a young mom who had just had a baby. Her husband was deployed overseas, and they just made one of, 10 or 15 moves over the course of the husband's career. So no source of support. No mom's group had been established, no family in the area. And this woman gets very, very ill very quickly. And she literally walked down the street, saw some military stickers on someone's car, and knocked on their door and said, "I know you're a military family. I need help. Can you take me to the hospital?" And this kind of stress, I mean, it's something you really can't anticipate. You can anticipate missing the spouse and having to find new doctors and maybe finding some work for yourself and school for the kids. But I don't think you can anticipate how isolating it can be to be truly alone amidst millions of other people. In many ways,
being a military spouse sort of redefines being a single wife or a single mother as compared to the rest of American society, doesn't it?
It really does. Here you enter marriage looking to be, part of a partnership, and it's very difficult to do that when the two of you are in separate continents or even in separate states or different sides of the country. And so it's an interesting balance. And what I also learned today from my friend Carrie is that often before these, and I'm going to say husbands, I know that we have a growing number of wives that are the active duty person and husbands that stay at home, but just for ease of the conversation, I'm going to refer to the wives as being home and the husbands as being away. As the husbands are preparing for deployment or the move, there's so many business points that need to be handled. Do you have your power of attorney in place? Do you have your will in place? Are you gearing up for deployment? So there's lots of business stress pulling at you. And then there's the family stress. Your wife will miss you terribly, wants to spend time with you. If there are children involved, they need to know that their dad is present and accounted for, because he may not be there tomorrow and, frankly, may not be coming home. So oftentimes these dads leave under really stressful circumstances. So now they're gone. Now the spouse is gone and you've left on bad circumstances, and now you're left to pick up the pieces. It can be very, very challenging.
How does a left-behind spouse, male or female, How do they start building a normal that they can live their lives around while the other spouse is deployed, either unattached or deployed, such as in Afghanistan? What do you do to establish a normal?
Well, I think there are many areas of support within the military, especially for those spouses who are living on base. I know they have spousal support, you know, when husbands are deployed and even when they're coming home. But a lot of our families are living off base now, especially with base closures and realignment. So there's a lot of dissemination amongst civilians of these military spouses where support is not readily available. So, again, referring to my friend Carrie, she said she really dug into her job. She had a career as a headhunter. She spent a lot of time working and walking her pets and her dogs and really just created a life of her own and kind of put her marriage on hold. You have to. You can't pass the days just crying and missing your spouse so much and not living yourself. You have to find a way to survive. And children are a great equalizer. If you have children that are in school, it's a wonderful way to meet other families. And there are a lot of single moms out there due to different circumstances, not just the military. So there is a lot of support in moms groups and single parent groups to help you kind of get through the day and manage a family household as a single parent.
Now for the other side of that coin, there is someone that you hopefully love or loved at one time before they left, now on the other side of planet Earth. How do you go today and, if not maintain that relationship, keep it healthy, keep it alive, and keep it open so that when they come home, you can pick it up and try again, as it were?
Well, I think social media has brought a huge advantage to spouses who live remotely. With Facebook and texting and Skyping, you can actually maintain a pretty decent relationship. I have a daughter who's got a boyfriend in college, and they do their homework together. They do FaceTime, and they do their homework together with their phones in front of them. So there are ways to stay connected in that way. Also, embracing that you're missing somebody. You know, John, I've been married, you know, for 8 years now, and I adore my husband, and we spend a lot of time together. But the times that he goes away, I really appreciate the opportunity to miss him. And no, I really wouldn't choose to miss him for 8 months at a time, like these military spouses do, or even longer. But you can take that situation, and you can turn it into, wow, a wonderful opportunity to be courted remotely and to miss someone and to anticipate the when they come home and that reunion, or you can become resentful and be lonely and kind of wallow in your misery and the responsibilities that you have of being a single parent. So I would encourage your listeners to really embrace those opportunities. I have a friend who, you know, took really lovely intimate pictures for her spouse's eyes only and sent them to him with an article of clothing she'd worn in the pictures. And I bet that husband was really happy and anxious to come home to that wife who was able to keep the home fires burning in this very lovely and intimate way. So it can be difficult, but you can turn the situation to your advantage with the right mindset. And it's Martin Luther King Day today, so I do want to honor Martin Luther with this quote that's very applicable. It says, "I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear." And I really think that you can choose to love someone or you can choose to hate the situation. And love is truly an action word. It's not a feeling. It can be mistaken as a feeling. But loving someone, whether they're here or there, is a choice. Loving them by being supportive and not complaining and making them happy to come home to you.
So it can be a noun, a verb, an adjective, etc.
All of it. All of it.
And this gets back to a basic question that I know commanding officers always have when they're signing those permission slips for young soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, as well as their younger officers, to get married. They look up and say, okay, how well do you know this person? How do they really have the qualities and the toughness to go ahead and do this? Talk a little bit about the qualities of good military spouses, men and women, that you've encountered in your practice over the past few years that you really admire.
Well, the spouse that's at home has to be independent and have a life of his or her own. A lot of people, especially if they get married young, they're looking for an escape or they're looking for someone to save them. And if that's the intent or the underlying feeling of the marriage, then boy, is that spouse in trouble, because if the spouse is absent, there's no one there to save you. So if you are two people, two independent, whole people coming together, and you have a life and interests of your own, then that spouse will typically do quite well. Of course, everyone needs support, and I can't stress enough how important not feeling alone is. It is a sign of strength to ask for help, I believe, not a sign of weakness. And I came across a Twitter chat, and I'm pretty new to the whole Twitter community, but I'm really embracing it. It has a lot of wonderful community that can be international. And there's a Twitter chat called Dad Chat. It's hashtag Dad Chat. And it was started by an author, journalist, and television producer when he suddenly found himself to be a single dad. And he has this now community of tens of thousands of people who come together once a week on Thursdays and talk about parenting. And he comes at it from a male perspective, but certainly as a mother and a woman, I find a great source of inspiration and community in that dad chat. So finding support, whether it's in your physical community in your neighborhood, or a virtual community, or even just a regional community like at a support group through a naval base or army base, I think there are many opportunities for these spouses to get support, asking for help when they need it as a sign of strength, so that their spouses can come home to someone who is not needy and hanging on them, but someone who has had a wonderful life on their own, but so happy to have their spouses come back.
And for those of you who'd like to talk to Dr. Tanya, Lord knows I love doing it, give us a call. Our call-in line is 347-945-7246. Again, area code 347-945-7246. Now let's turn this just a little bit on its head and talk a little bit about coming home, okay? Your spouse is coming home. And over the past 12 or 13 years since 9/11, this has normally taken the form of a happy, even joyous few days following the return, a great scene on the ramp or at the base with lots of hugs and kisses, and then, of course, the inevitable doing of the honey-do list, all the things that broke while the other spouse was out and that spouse needs to take care of. Now, normally we see that being into part of a six-month to a year process of getting ready for the next deployment. And it has its own stresses, you know, coming back and all of a sudden you're no longer part of the normal in your own house. But, and we'll talk more about that later, but what does it mean suddenly when you come home and you're home? You're not going back over there. I mean, obviously there's the joy of not going someplace where somebody wants to shoot you and kill you, but are there not stresses from suddenly having to fit in to the new normal that was created normally without your input?
There are huge stresses, John, and As luck would have it, I've been reading this book called The Secret Lives of Wives, and it's by one of my favorite authors named Iris Krasnow. And I'm reading this book, and I recognize one of the people she interviewed as a friend of mine. So I'm going to quote my friend, Tekla, in the book The Secret Lives of Wives. And Tekla says, "There is, of course, the problem of reentry, which every wife who has an absentee husband can identify with. As husband returns, wife is thinking, everything has run very smoothly in your absence. Why are you rocking the boat? And his grumbling answer is invariably, because I'm in charge. Pasting a smile on her good wife face, she can barely be heard whispering to herself, that's what you think." And I think that is just a great example of the very stressful dichotomy of these men who want to come home and be in charge, yet they have been told what to do by their superiors their entire military lives. And this little passage also brings to mind one of my favorite movies, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And if you haven't seen it, you really should. The man, it's a very traditional Greek family, and the man wants to be known, I am the head of the family. And his wife whispers, yes, if the man is the head, but the woman is the neck, and the neck turns the head. And I just am giggling to myself now, remembering that. And if you can find this balance, this beautiful symbiotic relationship, instead of being conflicting and on different sides of the same argument or stress, to be on the same side, like the neck turns the head and the head follows the neck, it can be a beautiful relationship where you can co-lead the family.
But nevertheless, right after that hug on the ramp or at the barracks, and everybody piles into the car and goes to have dinner and comes home and the kids are farmed out to neighbors or the grandparents, once you get past that initial wonderfulness, the point of departure is nevertheless a little like two boxers in opposite corners of a ring, is it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely it is, John. And I'd like to think that our folks that are having spouses come home can kind of agree, or they should both agree really, to have kind of a Switzerland zone or a no man's zone, where there is a reentry time where no major decisions are made and no fights are had, that we're just waiting for the dust to settle. You need to get to know each other again. This is a second or third or fourth or tenth honeymoon opportunity. And honeymoons can be really good and really bad. They're wonderful in so many ways as you're becoming intimate with your partner and enjoying, having your spouse home again. But even first honeymoons, even if no one's leaving, can be a huge period of adjustment. And if you can agree to just say, wow, I didn't realize that you leaving the toothpaste cap off would be so very annoying to me. And, why can't you have the dishes done, before you go to bed at night? If you can just agree to not let those things define your marriage and to say, it's going to take a while for us to get to know each other again. Let's be gentle with each other and be gentle with ourselves. I think this reentry period can go a lot more smoothly. And I hear from my military wives that is more easily accomplished in second and third and fourth deployments or last deployments, and not so much the first time. But the first time you do have, you have utopic views of what it's going to be like to have a homecoming. But then you realize it's not all roses and perfume. It really does take work. You say, wow, we need to really get some strategies. It's a business of a relationship. Let's get some strategies to cope with the reentry. And I think having a plan sets you up for success in far greater ways than you can imagine.
I have had many friends coming back from deployments, thankfully more and more of them going on final deployments over the past few years to Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places, who literally talk about the morning after they get home. They wake up, the sun is shining, birds are chirping, and they look over, and there is this minor moment of horror when they say, who is this person I'm sleeping next to? Who is this person? Why am I here? What did I do to get here? There literally is the sense that you're starting from zero with a lot of people, is it not?
There really is, and it can be a wonderful opportunity to wash away, the sins of the past, so to speak, or any troubles that you may have had before. And I think, again, just being gentle, knowing that, we did enter into marriage. There was a reason that we fell in love and married each other, and to trust that commitment as enough to get you through the next few weeks or months of potential rocky road. I think if you think about it too much, if you overthink it, I think you could really make yourself crazy. I come from literally a battlefield, waking up in this cozy, cozy bedroom with the sunlight streaming through, not knowing this person, but trusting that there's a real reason why you're there. Remembering why you got there in the first place and trusting it, I think, is hugely helpful.
And you talk about going back and re-examining the question, why did we do this in the first place? What is it we saw in each other that made us want to be together in the beginning? Is that not a great point of departure for not just last deployments, but any deployment?
It is, and I'll paraphrase this quote I read recently on Facebook. I just am a big fan of these Facebook quotes. And it said, when you're thinking of quitting something, take a moment to remember why you started. And that is very applicable here. And it might be a great exercise for people who are anticipating a reentry to write down some reasons for each other. It might be a really nice exercise in prepping for the reentry. The 10 top reasons why I fell in love with you, or what I'm most looking forward to about being, together as a family again. That is kind of greasing the wheels for reentry versus going from, shooting and being shot at to, you know, being embraced in warm, loving arms. That's a huge conflict. And even though it's a wonderful transition, that dramatic of a change can be stressful, even in a good way. So I think maybe greasing those wheels and having the conversation and remembering why you fell in love, I think that is really, really helpful. And it is an opportunity for a new beginning. You know, marriage is not a perfect relationship in a lot of cases. And instead of focusing on the two or three things that maybe weren't going well in a marriage, focusing on the 97 things that really were working well and choosing to see those and remember those as you come home.
And remembering that not everyone who goes overseas is married, but perhaps you've had a relationship, maybe a committed one, maybe one that started before you left and has actually grown while you've been on deployment. Thank God for social media. Do you have anything specific for the people who are trying to move forward and expand and make an existing relationship bigger, better, deeper, all those different metaphors that we use to try and describe moving towards making a committed partnership out of a relationship? What sorts of stresses did those people feel when they come back together at the end of a deployment?
Yeah, that's a good one and a tough one. I think, you know, if you're not already in a committed relationship leaving, there might be very different reasons why you maybe entered into that relationship or maintained it while you were gone. You know, it might be nice to have a reason to come home to. And I would just encourage your listeners who are in that position of coming home to, you know, to have a real honest talk with themselves. You know, is this person, was that person just filling a role? Or is this truly, do I really love the person? And maybe giving themselves some room for some introspection there. You know, and I'm not saying that everyone has an ulterior motive. Sometimes timing is just really bad that you meet the person you're meant to be with just before you deploy. But I think there's probably some real strong emotional ties to just knowing that you have someone at home. So is it the idea of that person or is it that person itself? And I would really, you know, want to make sure that before they made any permanent decisions in a time of transition, meaning marrying someone as soon as you got home, probably not so wise, probably wise to give it a nice buffer zone as well and see if this is really, you know, if you are indeed in love with the person instead of the idea of having someone at home. And these similar stresses, you know, also occur in the parent-child relationship. We have a lot of young people out there who haven't even been in relationships who are dealing with reentry into their parents' homes. And so that has, a similar set of stresses around their reentry.
Which raises the question, as you reestablish these relationships, and again, I'm going to come at it from the male perspective since I seem to be suffering from terminal testosterone and Y chromosome poisoning. The question I would ask is, putting it simply, as men like to do, does this mean I got to start dating again and I got to go and take the kids to the amusement park or in the movies and get to know everybody all over again?
Yes, you do. And I say that with a smile on my face because I date my husband all the time and I would like to be thought of as his forever girlfriend. I think a lot of marriages suffer because they become very, you know, the partners become very complacent and say, I don't have to try so hard anymore. Well, I like trying for my husband. You know, in a moment when maybe I don't feel like, you know, putting my hair in a nice style or putting on lipstick, I think, you know what, if I don't want to do it for me, I need to do it for him. I want to make him happy he's walking through the door at night or at the end of the month or at the end of the deployment. So I'd like to think that, yes, these spouses do have to date their wives and they do have to take their children to the amusement park. I mean, eventually you have to get back to the mundaneness of being, you know, the grass cutting, you know, garbage taking out husband and father. But I think it's a lovely investment in your family to continue to do those things. And a lot of dads, you know, who are overseas, they don't have the opportunity to become mundane. Just when it gets mundane, they leave again, you know. So they maybe have a slight advantage that they have the enthusiasm to come home and do those wonderful things. So, again, I'm a flipper. I take a negative and turn it into a positive. And I think that's really good advice. You can look at any situation, even very, very, you know, tragic ones, and say, what have I learned? What would I do differently? You know, what has this brought to my life instead of what has this taken from my life? You have a case of terminal testosterone. I have a case of terminal optimism.
Yes, you do, thank goodness. And with that, we're going to take a quick break for a couple minutes, put some network promotion messages up, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at RightStream and hashtag RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network, tune in to host Daria Ann for Right Stream Tuesday. Daria Ann interviews talented authors in a variety of literary genres, from urban fantasy and historical romance to autobiography and science fiction. Right Stream Tuesday celebrates the creativity that flows through every author. It also delves into the all-important publishing and marketing aspects of writing, including the benefits and pitfalls of independent publishing versus traditional publishing, and how to effectively use social media for success. Right Stream Tuesday with Daria Ann. Tuesday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the Right Stream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's L-I-S-A-T-A-R-V-E-S. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA, America's Wireless Companies, and the National Safety Council.
And we are back on Military Monday. Are you still with us there, Dr. Tranya?
I'm here, John.
Okay. Well, I would like to believe that, you know, I'd like to believe there's always a happy ending out there, which may be a consequence of my having grown up in Orange County, not far from Disneyland. But the truth of the matter is military marriages and relationships are not immune to the social stresses that we see in American life today. And in fact, I would have to go back and check and see what the actual rate of divorce is in marriages these days, but last time I checked, it was about half, and I have to believe military marriages probably are a bit worse than that. But what happens to a military couple when the military spouse comes home, stays home, and they suddenly find out, oh, this isn't the person that I fell in love with and married 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years ago. And this is a problem that we see not just with privates and petty officers. We see it with generals and admirals when they come to the end of their careers as well. Talk a little bit about these breaking bad consequences and stresses and how you go and avoid falling into a terminal spiral relationship-wise with your significant other.
You know, John, I look at conflict, you know, between married couples as kind of a line in the sand. And I would imagine that when you have someone coming home from literally the battle line, someone who's dealt with life or death stresses on a daily basis, you know, they come home and they're dealing with that baggage. And they come home to a spouse that has dealt with, you know, raising children on their own or dealing with really stressful at-home circumstances, moving a lot, reestablishing their own professional career, handling the hot water heater breaking, handling the dog getting hit by the car with no support, that you could get, and pardon my French, but you can probably get into a pissing match. You know, my troubles are worse than your troubles. So now there's this great line in the sand. And instead of stepping across the line to your spouse's side and holding his or her hand and traversing those stresses together, saying, wow, that must have been really tough for you. I really don't understand. How can we make it better for you? And being on that same side of the line in the sand instead of on opposite sides pushing at each other, I think when you can't step over, when you're pushing against the other person, I think that's when the marriage, you know, goes into that terminal death spiral. And it's really heartbreaking because there are consequences to staying, you know, and in an unhappy marriage, and there are consequences, I believe, for, you know, far greater consequences to leaving. And I'm going to refer to another quote by my friend Tekla in the book The Secret Lives of Wives by Iris Krasnow. And Tekla says that many times in my marriage, we were tempted to throw in the towel, which would have been the easy way out, but we stuck with it. Now I am more than thankful that some inner strength kept me tied to the life I'd chosen. Through our 44 years together, we were challenged with trials and upheavals, but it created a solidarity and appreciation for each other. Through all the years of struggle, we've created a history, and it's a history that belongs only to us. And so they have created a tapestry of their 44-year marriage. And I would imagine with her husband being deployed many times over the course of their marriage, that tapestry has some great big tears in it that has been very rudimentary, you know, has been very crudely stitched together, and it may have some really thin spots where it's been worn thin, and it may have some bright and shiny, you know, spots that have maintained the integrity of the original, you know, fibers and ink. And so this tapestry is theirs. It's the story of their life. And she says it would have been easy to throw in the towel because what do? Conflict is uncomfortable. We run away. It's harder to stay. It's harder to stay and repair those wounds and those tears than it is to leave. But I think the fruits pay off in spades if you can really work through that. A lot of marriages don't survive because of the stresses that have been so tremendous with one partner overseas and one partner here. And it's really, it's tragic. It's tragic.
In my lifetime of working around and with military personnel, it's become something of a bad joke that the time that people split up is either very early in their careers and marriages, those first 5 years, or right as they get out after, you know, having survived the wars, having gone overseas and come home, having built a home, having built a career, and suddenly you're making the decision to get out of the service, and you get out, and all of a sudden you've completely thrown the dynamic of the marriage into imbalance. The balance has changed. The deal has changed. What is it that's so odd and difficult about changing the old normal of military life for the new normal of post-military life, retirement, and or a new civilian job? Why is that so hard for couples to survive?
Well, I think without a plan, and again, you can tell I'm big on planning, without a plan, I think it would be incredibly difficult. You know, here I would imagine that when a husband comes home, permanently and has to then redefine himself or herself, that there's a time lapse, right? So now is this person kind of hanging around the house, you know, which can be, you know, if the house has been the woman's domain for years, if not decades, if she, you know, she is a captain of her home, she has run it like a ship, like a tight ship, and she has done it very successfully. And I don't believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that these folks come home, you know, they come home on a Sunday and they start their new job on a Monday. I think there's often a big lag time there as they get retrained or go on job interviews or decide where they're going to live and what kind of work they'd like to do. There's a lot of that kind of hanging around the house time, and boy, that will tip a household out of balance very, very quickly, from having no one there to having someone there all the time. So I think it's being respectful, again, that this is quite likely to happen, and giving that person some space to catch their breath and redefine themselves. Maybe the wife needs to not be hovering, you know, around the husband. Maybe the wife needs to continue with the things that she has done to survive over the past years and decades and, you know, left the house, you know, leave the house, go on a girl's weekend, you know, go to your job, you know, go to the gym, go do things that have nourished your own self and give the returning spouse some space to establish a new equilibrium. I think that's really helpful. But I think if you don't anticipate it and you don't address it, boy, that imbalance will tip the ship real quickly.
And in a little bit of present-day perspective, coming home and getting out of the military, if you're going to be one of those people demobilized over the next year or two as units are shut down and as people reach the end of their careers, the job market sucks in the civilian world. Let's just say it right up front. It stinks. And it's not like having trouble finding a new profession isn't a little bit of a stress on a marriage. What kinds of stresses does suddenly having a one income with the other person chronically unemployable because they were a soldier or a sailor for all their lives, what kind of stress does that bring to a marriage, old or young?
Do I have to really lay it out? It's horrific. You know, not only are you having the stresses of, you know, having the person here and reestablishing your relationship, but now you're under financial stress where you may not know how to put food on your table. And some of the things that I see from a civilian point of view, you know, the military does a great job of taking care of their people in every way, and I would venture to say and stick my neck out almost to their detriment. I know that these folks in a lot of places, they shop at the commissary. You know, they get their groceries at the commissary. They get their other household items at the PX. They're told what doctors to go to. They don't have to choose their own health insurance. They know what clothes to wear. They wear uniforms. So there's been no choice their entire lives, and now there's every choice. Now you have to make every decision, and that can be paralyzing, deer in the headlights. And now I have to figure out how to pay for all this stuff. You know, again, if you don't have a plan of action, if you haven't, you know, realized this, know this now. You know, look at what it's going to take to raise your family and to maintain your household on one budget. Does it take downsizing, moving to a different part of the country where it's more reasonable? What is your plan? You know, if you don't have a plan, if you're reactive instead of proactive, the odds are going to be stacked against you in every way. I know that there are headhunters that specialize in military transitions, and I think that would be a great thing for your, you know, for active duty folks to do. I know that there are support groups for transitioning. Any support you can get is so helpful. And again, asking for help is absolutely a sign of strength and not weakness.
And that particular point becomes really important, especially if you have underlying problems like injuries suffered during deployment, including combat injuries, chronic pain, PTSD, TBI. We bring home, for people who've been in the military, we bring home people who, for lack of a better word, have been damaged by what they've done with their lives in the service of the rest of us. We really need to go and take better care of them once they come home, don't we?
We do, John. It's really heartbreaking to hear the stories that I hear from vets and even active duty people who are home in between deployments that, you know, it takes them months, you know, to get proper medical care, or they've been undiagnosed with a pretty significant health issue. And a lot of them do choose to go out of their programs, out of the VA system and out of the TRICARE system, and pay out of pocket for a lot of the health care. And we are super sensitive to that in our particular practice, and I think a lot of other practitioners of alternative and even traditional health are sensitive to military folks who are seeking, you know, taking their health in their own hands and getting the care.
And we have a caller. Let's see if we can get them on here. Good day. You're on Military Monday.
Good morning. How you doing there?
Fine. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Very good. And who would you like to talk to?
Well, I've been wondering the comments I was going to make about the transitioning back into civilian life is very difficult. I agree with that. And the support system is definitely needed. And what a lot of the civilian force needs to understand is to give that support, the families, the friends, because that's the networking that can help them acclimate back into, you know, to getting a job and getting the health care that they need. So, I agree with what she says about, you know, getting that support, finding that support once you're about ready to get out, because it makes that transition so much easier.
Thank you very much. Let's let Dr. Tanya respond here.
I have a question for you. I mean, do you find that returning military personnel, do they have an easy time asking for the help? Because as a civilian, sometimes I offer advice when it's not even solicited. That's just my nature. But a lot of people want to be asked for help. Do you find that, I don't know if it was your husband or yourself who was in the service, do you find that do they tend to ask for the help that they need?
Well, a lot of times we tried to, I've tried to find it on my own when I was away from my family when I got out. And it was, this was 20 years ago, too, is what I'm telling you, is that there really wasn't there then. It's better now, much better now. It just needs to be known more. It needs to be, I guess, it's a very hard thing to plan at times because you don't know who to ask. But when if you give unsolicited like that, that's awesome. It needs to be done more because that could be one of the biggest things you could do for a veteran once they get out of the service is to simply showing them, hey, go down here. I found out that there's a job. Or these people write up great resumes. Or let me sit down and talk with you and see what we could do with what you did in the service that can make it useful for society now.
That's great advice, and I'm so happy to hear that you feel that it's getting better as time goes on. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. I'm glad to have you on today.
Thank you. Take care.
And Dr. Tanya, we're talking to someone there who is obviously, you know, taking a glass half full attitude towards the transition process. Let's talk a little bit now about if you're that person making the transition, you're doing something you've never done. You made a point just a minute ago about things in the military being fairly simple in the sense that they tell you what to do. They tell you where to go. They tell you how to walk. They tell you how to talk. They tell you how to dress. And suddenly, you have to put on the suit. And I mean literally, you have to put on a business suit for the first time maybe since you were a teenager to go do interviews, to go into the office. You're feeling, in addition to probably being creeped out by the feel of polyester like that, you're having to do something that is emotionally uncomfortable. Talk a little bit about overcoming the fear and discomfort of not wearing your uniform, not having your career laid out on your chest and your shoulders. What does that mean for a man or woman going out into the civilian job market, in some cases maybe after 30 or 40 years in the military?
I think a lot of the skills that they learned in the military would be very helpful here, and one of the main ones being fake it until you feel it. You know, I can't imagine that a lot of these, you know, young folks going into the military are comfortable with the thought of literally, you know, hand-to-hand combat or negotiating with terrorists or all the other very uncomfortable and scary things that they've been asked to do on their deployments. And you can do that, you know, if you fake it, you will eventually feel it, and that confidence really speaks volumes. So they can look at putting on their polyester business suit, as you say, as their uniform and as their coat of armor. And if you look like a professional and an executive, you'll often act like it. So a little bit of it is playing a mind game with yourself, not being so scared like you're playing dress up in your dad's clothes, but rather, this is my uniform. You know, and the firm handshake and great eye contact and aura of confidence that got you through rising ranks of the military will get you through rising the ranks in personal or civilian business.
Ironically, in some ways, it's easier for women to do this because, you'll forgive me for being just a tad sexist here, but girls are always girls and they always still worry about fashion and their looks, whereas guys coming out of the military after 20 years, their haircuts are just terrible. They really don't know what to do with that business suit that they were given for their retirement, much less what haircut to get, how to groom, and all that. It's a new world for the men.
I would imagine that it is. And if the folks that are listening don't have access to a headhunter or a job transition, you know, support group, they need to grab their closest girlfriend or their wife or their sister or their niece and say, "Hey, listen, I need a civilian makeover. Take me out to the mall, you know, make me look good." And seriously, that getting out into the social arena and feeling confident about how you look, I think, is really half the battle. Again, if you feel a certain way, you're going to act a certain way. And that small step, I think, can help reentry. No one should be expected to know how to do this on their own. You know, if we were meant to do everything on our own, we would be on this earth by ourselves. We're here to lend a helping hand, and people love to help. When someone asks me for help or advice, it just makes my day. I love to be asked for help, but I think we're so hesitant to stick our necks out. Again, we think of asking for help as a sign of weakness, but really it's a sign of strength. So ask a friend, neighbor, spouse, sister. Say, "Hey, listen, you know, I don't know how to. I've not shopped for a suit ever. Can you take me suit shopping?" Oh my gosh, they'd be thrilled.
Yeah, what woman doesn't like taking a man out and dressing him?
Right. And especially if he's cute, then you get a date out of the deal?
Not a bad deal, one way or the other. Our final segment is going to be a tad more serious, and let's jump into that as we head towards the close of the show. Abraham Lincoln, back during the final days of his life and his presidency, began the process of explaining to America why we needed to take care of our veterans, making them right, binding up the nation's wounds, and caring for those who survived combat but still carried its burdens and effects. Dr. Tanya, you see more of these people than I do. You're the one who sees the scars, the burns, the pain, the immobility, sometimes even things missing. How do we, as a society, better deal with those realities from this generation of combat veteran coming home? Because the reality is that there are two things that are going to make these kinds of injuries more common. Better body armor and protection in NRAPs and vehicles and such, and a vast improvement in the nature of combat medicine and what happens in that golden hour after they are wounded. More people are surviving more deadly weapons effects, but carrying the leftover residual effects of that with them for the rest of their lives. How, as a society, do we need to alter how we view returning veterans, and how do we need to care for them to go and fulfill President Lincoln's promise?
Well, we certainly need to honor them and their duty to our country. I mean, I have a nephew who's at the Naval Academy, and I love seeing people come up to him and thanking him for serving, you know, our country. And I try to make it a point to do that for veterans when it's obvious to me that they are a veteran. And especially in my practice, I thank all of our vets for their time of service. And just that gratitude, I think, has an effect of softening the heart in these people. And physical injuries are painful. There is no doubt that there are physical reasons for these folks with injuries and chronic conditions to be in pain. But I can tell you that if you are struggling emotionally, that compounds your pain, your true physical pain, exponentially. So although we may not be able to replace a missing limb or heal a burn scar, we can certainly, with a kind word, a soft touch, and a willing ear, help to heal these vets emotionally and mentally, and that has a very real effect on decreasing their physical pain and making that transition much more manageable. So, no, if you're not a doctor, you can help these folks. Just take a human interest in who they are and what they have done for our freedom, and that will go so much further than you can ever imagine.
And with that, we're kind of done with this. You've given us a wonderful, wonderful time. And now it's time to talk a little about you and what you've been doing since we last talked to you and what you're going to be doing in the future. How is your blog, AskDrTanya.com? How is your webpage? What are you working on next?
Lots of good stuff. And in fact, a lot of the things that we've talked about today, John, will be reflected in some pieces that I have during the upcoming week. So I hope that your listeners will take a moment to log on to our website. And because my name is a little bit unusual, I always have to spell it. So our website is www.drtanya, that's drtania.com. And additionally, we've been really quite successful in our social media pursuits. I've really loved having our Facebook page, being really active on that. And on Facebook and Twitter, we can be found at Ask Dr. Tanya, and that's AskDrTania. Our Facebook page is kind of a clearinghouse, although we put all of our original content, stories and articles that I write on there. I also scour the internet every day for inspirational quotes and relationship pieces. We have a little dose of humor and interesting statistics about health and lifestyle and relationships. I have a lot of fun doing it, and we have a great response. We have, you know, thousands of readers from across the globe. We have 10 Facebook fans from Bangladesh and 8 from Thailand. I think that's amazing that we can reach people around the world with our healthy, positive lifestyle and health messages. So I've really enjoyed that.
And as the resident guy on this conversation, let me tell you, folks, just if you want to take a 5-minute break and vacation, go and look at what she has put up every day on Ask Dr. Tanya and drtanya.com in her blog. I guarantee you some days it'll make you squirm, some days it'll make you laugh, some days it'll make you go, but there is no day you will not find something that you really should know from Dr. Tanya on her blog.
We definitely take on some difficult and controversial subjects, and I consider myself to be very transparent, John. I know that you read our blog, and you probably know more about me than you care to, but I think it's really important that each of us know that we're not alone in our feelings and our thoughts and our actions, and there are some subjects that many people, if not most people, even healthcare professionals, are hesitant to speak about. And there's not much that I'm not willing to say. And I'm sure I have some critics in that arena, but I have to be true to who I am. And I love knowing that, you know, if I have a feeling or a thought or a desire or a curiosity, that there's someone out there that's willing to share their story with me, so I'm willing to share my stories with the world, and I'm having a great time doing it. So I hope that your folks will take a moment to check us out.
And I hope you will come back and talk to us again when an appropriate topic comes up. Thank you for joining us again, Dr. Tanya.
Thanks, John. It's always a pleasure.
Take care. Have a great day, and go get toilet paper and milk. It's going to snow tomorrow.
That's what I hear. Bye-bye now.
Take care. And with that, we've come to the end of another Military Monday segment. I want to thank everybody over the past year who has gone and helped us grow this program, helped us grow the Right Stream Radio Network. It's been a genuine pleasure doing this. We're going to keep doing it. We're every week going to try and bring you something different, something new, maybe even something you're just not going to hear on the evening news or even on the internet. So we look forward to talking to you next week at 1 p.m. Eastern, and I hope you'll join us again for Military Monday. Have a great week, all. Be safe. Be warm. Take care.
I took a flat to a pawn shop for a broken guitar. I took a flat to a pawn shop. How much is that guitar? I took a flat to a pawn shop. Got me that guitar. What's a flat in a pawn shop to me? I saw a man on the TV in a mask with a gun. A man on the TV, he had a 10-year-old son. I saw a man on the TV, his son
Yeah.